You know, this is some kind of heat wave, right? It is hot out there.
Baltimore's best. You gotta love the heat.
I know. I always try to stay hydrated. See, that's what I'm talking about. I always try to drink plenty of water around, you know, this time of year, but sometimes you need like the little boost. So sometimes it might like get a sports drink or something else. And but you have to kind of be careful with all like the sugar that's in some of these, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I know my son is in town and he drinks coconut water all the time. And he was trying to convince me to make a little mocktail with some the other day. And I don't know. I think it must be an acquired taste, but I do feel like, okay, at least this is a healthier option than, putting it in with Fresca or Sprite, something like that. So.
Yeah, and there's something out there called cactus water that we're going to talk about today. I've never tried it, so I'm really
Me
interested
neither.
to hear about this. It's called prickly, and this isn't some like sponsored advertisement. This is a drink co-created by University of Maryland School of Pharmacy alumnus.
And who would think that you would go to pharmacy school and you'd be creating a beverage product?
It makes a little bit of sense, right? Because there's a lot of marketing that goes into pharmaceutical products.
True, true. It's just interesting to think that a pharmacy student, I'm picturing you're going to pharmacy school, you're going to put a white coat on and you're going to be working at your local pharmacy. But to think that some of our pharmacy students right here from UMB have gone on to create really unique products, I think that's really stand out. And I'm excited today to be talking to one of them.
Yeah, it seems like Kwame Yang had some great chemistry here in Baltimore. He graduated from the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy with his PharmD degree in 2015. He is now the CEO and founder of Prickly Cactus Water and has appeared on Shark Tank with his business partner, Mo Hassan.
Well, and Kwan is a first generation American. He was born in China. He was raised in Canada. And so we're going global with this episode. I love when we can really reach out and touch the world.
Dana, let's crack open a cold one of cactus water and say cheers to a new episode of the UMB Pulse.
Cheers.
You're listening to the heartbeat of the University of Maryland, Baltimore, the UMB Pulse.
Juan, welcome to the UMB Pulse. Thanks for coming on.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Charles.
Juan, I couldn't help but think of you as I was tidying up my deck the other day, getting ready for this. And in your honor, I brought my prickly pear cactus plant in to put behind me for the viewers who are on YouTube and looking forward to hopefully learning from you how to get stickers out of my fingers.
Yeah, it means a lot. You don't see that every day, so definitely appreciate it.
Tell us about yourself and your family. You were born in China, raised in Canada. Where in Canada did you grow up?
I first moved to Windsor, which was right across from the Detroit River at like 3.5 years old. And we were there for about 6 years or so, and spent majority of my formative years outside of Toronto in this town called Mississauga. It's the fifth largest city in Canada. Very difficult to spell. You know, everyone gets it
Yeah.
wrong. You guys still get it wrong. And then I went to college at McGill in Montreal, and then moved my way down to Baltimore for pharmacy school. And funny enough, in 11th grade was the first time I actually worked at a pharmacy. So this was at a retail chain community pharmacy called Shoppers Drug Mart, one of the biggest, chains up in Canada. I wonder if they're still around. I imagine that they are.
Yeah.
And so I was as a sort of a summer internship, and I just kind of fell in love with the profession. I really kind of saw myself as somebody who could be in it, really admire the pharmacists that were working there, love the community engagement, the patient engagement, just felt like a little community. I kind of really saw myself in that way. So I think from an early age, I was kind of set on pharmacy as that path. And all throughout college, it was always the decision. And so it was a very natural step to end up in Maryland afterwards. So that was how I kind of ended up here.
Great. So what were you studying in undergrad to get you prepared to come to pharmacy school?
It was a anatomy and cell biology bachelor's.
You were in Montreal, like you said. How do you choose Maryland? How do you come to the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, my parents had already moved down to the New York area, and so I kind of already knew in my heart of hearts that I was going to come down to the U.S. I think I was always interested. The U.S. just is represented like a land of opportunity. The American dream is something that resonates around the world, certainly. And so I think there's always a lot of excitement is what brought my parents here, and certainly, I followed suit. And Maryland was just, you know, obviously just a historical institution, fourth oldest pharmacy school in the country, you know, reputation preceded itself. And as soon as I visited the campus, I had a couple other offers at the time, but when I kind of visited the campus, it was a no-brainer when that offer was extended that this is where I was going to call home. And I spent a lot of good years, 2011 to 2015. We won a Super Bowl, you know, became a converted Ravens fan. I mean, football wasn't a thing up in Canada, right? Yards, what are yards, right?
Yeah. So then
it was a really, really exciting time to be a Baltimorean, and really proud period of my life, for sure, the 4 years I spent down here.
What about the campus stood out to you? You said you fell in love once you visited the campus.
I just think the whole vibe, you know, the culture, I think the institution, I mean, the facilities were top notch, definitely best in class. And I think that's even before some of the, you know, like, look at your backdrop, Charles, and there's a lot of the buildings that you have in your image weren't even there at the time. So I think there was a lot of change that happened in recent years, but Pharmacy Hall was just, I think, starting. I believe that was, we were maybe the first year in Pharmacy Hall or close to. At the time. And so that institute, that building itself just kind of blew my mind. And I thought it was just such a fantastic institution and building for learning and just for spending time. I could really see myself spending time there, right? And having just come from living in the city, I mean, I was also kind of still looking for that type of environment as well. And I think Baltimore checked a lot of those boxes. And, you know, as they say, it's far enough, close enough to your parents, right?
Yeah. So today, the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy has a pharmapreneurship program where they encourage entrepreneurs pursuing pharmacy degrees. University of Maryland Baltimore's graduate school has the Grid Pitch that's also for entrepreneurs. I don't think those existed while you were at University of Maryland School of Pharmacy, but you still had a pathway to pursue those interests. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think the School of Pharmacy, the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy, was just such a fantastic landing spot for me and my path in entrepreneurship. Again, I didn't come into pharmacy school thinking that this was going to ever be, you know, my future. And so I think the beauty of it is just how open-minded I kind of left the school. You know, coming in, I think there's just such a richness of the opportunities that you could, you know, pursue as a pharmacist. Because coming in, I think everyone's definition of pharmacy was behind the pharmacy counter at a CVS or a Rite Aid in a white coat. And I think that that generalization still exists in most people's imaginations, you know, and I don't blame any of that. I think that is the truth, but that was also how we viewed it, right? So coming in day one, you were just, you know, bombarded with such enthusiasm from the upperclassmen about just the different paths that you kind of pursue. And as you kind of really dug in, you realize that those options were actually a lot broader than you expected. And so that's really what took me down pathways of getting into the business of healthcare, right? Whether through managed care or industry. That was just one component of it. But then you look at just the different facilities that exist within Maryland, right? The research office, the PHSR group, the different schools, right? The medical school, the dental school, the law school, the social work school. I mean, the graduate programs here. I mean, we still work with the law clinic and law students at Prickley too. So you mean the resources here that were just available for you to kind of just realize that the world is so much bigger than just the four walls of pharmacy school. We're pretty abundant. And I think it just opened our minds, at least my mind personally, to, you know, a better representation of what the real world was like once we actually entered it and just felt less defined by the letters behind our name. You know, and I think that was something that we kind of walked away from. And Maryland did a really, really fantastic job of establishing.
We always try to promote the interprofessionalism that people can experience here at University of Maryland Baltimore and then take that into the field with them. So it's terrific to hear that it's working. Juan, I hear through the grapevine you're going to be back on campus this fall. Let us know how that will be and if there's a chance we can possibly meet you in person.
Yeah, I'm excited to be back on campus on October 8th. I'll be one of the afternoon keynote speakers at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy's inaugural Pharmapreneurship Summit. So I think that's, a really, really exciting opportunity that wasn't even available when I was there. So I'm really excited to see the direction that the school's taken and excited to be there and look forward to meeting, you know, anyone that's around.
That's great. Hopefully we can pop by and see you in person.
Yeah.
Totally.
Crack open a can of prickly while we're at it.
That's not a bad idea.
There you go. Right. Well, Juan, you have a sign for those of us who are on YouTube, we can see it, but for those who aren't, and it says prickly cactus water.
Yeah.
So prickly cactus water was just mentioned in a recent article by Good Housekeeping for their 2024 Best Snack Awards. To some people, prickly or cactus water is a new kind of product. We don't really know what it is. So tell us a little bit about it. What is it? How is yours different? What are some of the benefits of drinking cactus water versus other products?
Oh, absolutely. You know, so I mean, I can get into the story of how we started and all that kind of stuff. But before I even really do, I mean, our company really, I mean, we're on a mission to just create the healthiest natural hydration products in the market, starting with our, you know, flagship line of prickly cactus water made from real fruits of the cactus. You know, and so it's just, it's really, it's low sugar. It's all natural, really clean ingredient profile, and just a delicious product that's full of natural antioxidants. It's got some electrolytes and vitamin C as well. So as you mentioned, Good Housekeeping awarded it the best water alternative for 2024. So it's our sort of solution to create a product that just tastes really, really delicious and helps people make a healthier choice and create healthier habits really from a young age. Yeah, that's what Plug is all about.
How is it different from some of the other products that might be considered healthy options?
Yeah, I mean, I think it fits within, you know, a natural profile. So it's interesting, in 2024, a ton of products are still being created that are full of artificial ingredients, high in sugar. And so this kind of goes to why we started prickly in the first place. You know, we were always interested in health and wellness, hence why we were in pharmacy school. My partners and I are all pharmacists as well. And I just remember growing up with everything that was artificial: sodas, juices, drinks, high sugar, artificial ingredients. And I've seen in my life and those around me just kind of what habits that's created over time, even when, you know, in the moments of weakness, moments of stress, like what are the things that I crave? What are the things that people crave, still built upon the habits of what was formed being the only options that were available as kids. And then my partner Mo grew up in Lebanon and he has cactus water every summer, you know, a family recipe. And when he shared that with us up in Boston, you know, one summer day, we were just blown away by it. That dichotomy of how he could kind of grow up with something that was natural and delicious, and this is what we had as options. And so a lot of what we kind of built quickly around was, how do we create a brand that creates this better for you alternative for consumers, for families to build, you know, healthier habits from a young age, and also change the habits that they've had for a long time, but also brand it in a way that truly resonated. That didn't just say like, look, this is a healthy product. It's, of course it is, but we wanted people to just make sense of it and find it approachable and exciting and want to pull it off of shelf and just consume it because they wanted to consume it, and then find out after the fact that this is actually a really, really healthy choice for them. So that's really what our brand's about and why we're different.
Well, and when we think about the health conscious choices that are out there and sustainability and just the production, what does that look like? Take us out to the fields, into the production environment. You know, as I said, I have stickers in my fingers because these things have not only ginormous stickers on them, but also little tiny fine ones. So how is it produced? Tell us what that's like.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Prickly pears are actually a ubiquitous plant all around the world. And they've been native to the world for over 9,000 years. And so in certain parts, it's actually pretty indigenous, right? This legend hails from, you know, South America, Central America region. If you go to Mexico, it's actually on the flag of Mexico, you know? And so really, really interesting product that then, you know, the reason why it kind of really spread ubiquitously around the world, you know, it's in Lebanon, as you know, it's in Israel, it's in Italy, it's in India now, it's all over the world, is because it doesn't really require any water to grow. It makes it one of the most sustainable plants just in the world, 80% less irrigation than traditional crops. It's also a perennial plant. So once, you know, you take a pad and it finds itself somewhere that it starts to grow, within 18 months, you start to see it bear fruit, you know, prickly pears. And if you just harvest the prickly pear fruit itself, it's a perennial plant. So next year, they regrow, making it extremely sustainable, right? And so, you know, areas like Mexico, which is where we source our prickly pears from, it's a commoditized product. It's as common as a banana, you know, for folks down there, right? And so it's something that they're really used to consuming, right? Whether just as fresh fruit, whether it's a drink, whether it's you know, salads and things and juices, things of that nature. And it's, you know, if you go to the southwest of the U.S., it's all over Arizona. It's a state plant of Texas. It's all over California, right? In places where, you know, something like California takes 10% of the water to grow almonds. And so it's just like a fantastic plant that we believe, you know, has so much opportunity for so many different use cases beyond just consumption, you know, in the future. But, you know, for us, because it's so perennial, we're able to harvest it within the season. The growth season really in Mexico, at least, is between August to late October timeframe. So that's really when the growth season is. It's harvested. And then that's really where we get our prickly pears from. But if you just go further down south in Peru, that grill season is like October through February. And if you go to India, there's two multiple grill seasons, you know, twice a year. So it just depends on where you kind of source, you know, the ingredient over time.
How many prickly pears does it take to get a can?
So we actually, we puree all of our prickly pears. So when we source our ingredients, we work with suppliers, farmers, suppliers, that's puree, you know, and then we use the puree into each of our drinks. But yeah, each can has about 6% real prickly pear puree. We're actually the only, cactus water on the market that uses real fruit and real fruit puree in the market as well. So we kind of pride ourselves with that for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so back to where, when you're talking about sourcing, are you kind of getting it from those different countries at different times? So that's giving you a longer sourcing period?
Yeah, I mean, and certainly as we've scaled, I think it's necessitated just really strong redundancies within our supply chain. So as we scale, it's going to continue to force that. But predominantly so far, we've sourced mostly in Mexico, but we certainly have sourced some Peruvian prickly pears as well. So I think it just continues to expand. At the end of the day, I think quality is really, really important. So the best sourced and the best sustainably sourced products are really important to us. And in terms of, you know, reliability, but also quality of taste. And then just reliability of being able to support that, you know, year round, especially as we scale, you know. So we do envision probably having a more diverse supply chain in terms of countries as we get bigger and bigger, for sure.
So how does studying pharmacy help you with the business selling cactus water?
Well, you know, it's almost funny. In some ways, it kind of feels like we're right where we're supposed to be, because the founders of Coke and Pepsi were pharmacists too. Actually,
that's true.
Know,
yeah,
Pepsi was dyspepsia, right, for irritated stomach. So it's funny, in funny ways, you know, we're kind of full circle. But we wouldn't be here without having studied pharmacy. I mean, not to mention the skills that we obtained at the school, but also just in the career that pharmacy really is, and just how communicative it is in terms of the relationship that you develop and the communication skills you have with consumers, with patients. I mean, I think you just have such a robust skill set. In terms of communication, but also in problem solving and in just kind of connecting the dots and working with other, collaborating, right, with other healthcare professionals. These are all just fundamentally strong business skills, you know, and you also kind of think about what pharmacy is. I mean, is pharmacy itself not an entrepreneurial, you know, domain, right? Every pharmacist that initially started a pharmacy was in themselves their own business owners, right? So I think it's built on a foundation of entrepreneurship. I ended up going to biotech after pharmacy school, and I think biotech is just full of entrepreneurs. I mean, it's built on the business of healthcare, right? And so you're integrated in so much of this. So I think it was a really natural transition for us to go into business, because we had a lot of the skill sets already. Not to mention, I mean, Prickly wouldn't be here fundamentally if not for the network that we had developed at pharmacy school and beyond. So much of the funding network came from those relationships. And so fundamentally, I mean, yeah, I can say hands down, I mean, we wouldn't be the company that we are without having come from the background we came from.
So before you launched the company with your friend Mo, who you mentioned on Shark Tank, or he mentioned on Shark Tank where the recipe, you know, originally came from. During this time, you worked for some pharmaceutical companies. What did you take away from your time in the industry? What did you do?
Yeah, I mean, a whole host of different domains over my time in the industry. And what was really cool in my time in the biotech industry too was I spent time in a multitude of different companies, different size companies, like companies of 1,000 employees, 8,000 employees, 40,000 employees, and over 100,000 employees. So that was really, really cool just to see the different scale and scope of how these different groups worked. My favorite experience was the smallest, right? It just felt like you were just, you know, we moved so much faster. It felt like the problems that we're solving were quick. Felt like decisions were being made really quickly. There was less red tape. And I really kind of was, I think, inspired by that to appreciate entrepreneurship deeply in that way. In many ways, I mean, it was a startup, you know, biotech company. And in terms of the roles that I had, I mean, it went from health economics outcomes research to medical training, you know, to other types of field strategy work. And so I held a different set of skill sets across the time that I was there. And I think it was just, again, the industry itself lent itself so much to the richness and culture of entrepreneurship that it just felt like a really natural space for me once I realized that, you know, the skills were there, but it wasn't necessarily where I envisioned myself, you know, for the rest of my career either.
Right. So you had the fateful moment where you and Mo get the call, come on Shark Tank, pitch your product. Your episode aired in May 2022. We're now 2 years after that, and we're still talking about it. I'm sure it's still resonating today and reaping benefits for you. On camera, you agreed to a deal with Barbara Corcoran for $200,000 line of credit and a 5% stake. With Shark Tank, sometimes the deals don't go through that are presented on TV. Sometimes they're changed after the filming wraps. Other times it's as is presented and it's going, you know, gangbusters. Did the deal go through? What kind of happened after that was agreed to on TV?
Yeah. So unfortunately I can't disclose anything from that physically or specifically. But I will say as a whole, I mean, it was a tremendous experience for us and the outcome of it was tremendous. To your point, Charles, I mean, we get asked that question every single day. It'll be on our tombstone, how was Shark Tank, you know? And so we're really thankful that it was a good experience because I do definitely feel for folks that maybe didn't have as much of a good experience because it is something that you definitely will continue to socialize over the course of your life. And I think it's a huge boost of credibility for any business that ends up on Shark Tank, right? Especially one that secures a deal. And it's led to a lot of great, you know, conversations, buyer meetings, consumer interactions, and just, again, other things that we've leveraged at Boar. So definitely a big part of our history, for sure. Really, really strong moment. And we've grown so much from that moment, too. You know, so it's been a minute.
Yeah. And, you know, the great thing about the show, too, is that, you know, it's syndicated. It's on, I think, Hulu, where people can watch it anytime. And I'm sure you might see an unexpected boost every so often. I know, you know, another reality show I watched, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Guy Fieri mentions it when a rerun airs. We tell these people, these restaurateurs in advance when we're filming the episode with them, just know that there are going to be reruns and you're going to be unexpectedly busy. Whenever a rerun airs.
It was so funny. I think it was like last month we were at a trade show in Salt Lake City in Utah. And we were at the hotel that night and reran that night that we were there. And so the next day we showed up and they're like, you were on TV. We saw you on TV last night. We're like, yeah, I mean, you know, it was a really serendipitous moment. And then we ended up at the airport and some random, you know, person went up to my partner because we were still wearing our prickly shirt. She's like, I just saw you on TV last night.
Oh, that's
so for most folks, they don't know when it aired. It could have happened last night, for all you know, right? So it is the gift that keeps on giving, to your point, Charles, and a great, again, probably one of the best PR moments that you could ever receive as a business, for sure.
Well, I know there's only so much you can talk about. How did it wind up that you were on the show? And then, you know, from a viewer perspective, is it really as kind of intense as what we perceive it to be?
Yeah. I think Shark Tank is the epitome of the American dream when you think about what entrepreneurship is to America. And they've done a fantastic job with that production to represent and select a very diverse set of founder and founder stories that I think represents what entrepreneurship in America is. So really proud to be an alumni of that program. We actually were very, very lucky. We launched February of 2021. And this is back when Facebook was still Facebook and not Meta. And so this is also before iOS 14, which is the big update that really disrupted, you know, Facebook marketing and things like that nature for the worse. But at the time, we had posted up a Facebook ad to announce our launch. And that first week, Friday, we get this email from Shark Tank producers asking us to apply. And we had no idea that this was real. We were just kind of like, this is a random email in our hello inbox. And it was, turns out, you know, so we're like, all right, we're happy to sign our, you know, life away and fill out this giant application, you know, for about, you know, it took us maybe 3 hours to do. Longest application of my life. Turns out it was real, you know, which is great. So they found us and it was just mind blowing that all happened. And then it was a really long process, you know, from that moment to the time we aired was almost 15 months. You know, a lot of prep work, a lot of filming, a lot of producing, a lot of editing, a lot of that kind of stuff. But I will say, you know, it was a very, very, I think, authentic representation of the conversation that we had in the tank. You know, we were in there for about 45 minutes and I think it was edited post-production to about 8 or 9 minutes. But watching it, and I mean, when it was on TV, it was the first time that we saw it too. You know, and we're also not even sure if it is going to air, right? So we've all this production available and we're hoping, you know, it does air, and it totally did. So we had a Shark Tank party at my buddy's restaurant. And so we're all waiting for us to come onto TV and we're just like crossing our fingers that it's going to happen. You know, eat crow. So it certainly was one of those moments that I'm glad it happened. And then, I just felt like they did a fantastic job of representing the conversation, the dialogue. Certainly there was some production, but very minimal in terms of the spirit of the conversation and dialogue. And for us, we kind of went in there with a very, I think, prepared game plan. Like, we definitely knew what we were willing to offer, what we were willing to negotiate down to. And so fortunately for us, I think the conversation actually ended up being right in line with our planning. So we were very, very lucky to not get kind of caught off guard, you know, through the process.
So Quan, how are you overcoming the challenges that the Sharks brought up about distribution, shelf space challenges, and also the marketing?
Every day, daily, just waking up every day, trying to be better, you know, and I think this is a, I mean, entrepreneurship isn't for everybody, you know, as much as it's glamorized, it's the single most difficult professional challenge I've ever undertaken in my life. And I can say, I'm sure every one of my, you know, partners and team members would agree. It's not for everybody, you know, and it's a very gritty, you know, path to take. And so you have to just always be problem solving and think about solutions that don't even really exist, right? That's really what the spirit of entrepreneurship is. And so for us, it's really just about taking every day at a time and just, you know, taking every win at a time and building that distribution, because the thing of it is the harder something is, the more you overcome of it, the greater the chances of success are. And that's obvious, but it also means that the barrier of entry for other competitors are much, you know, higher. So all these challenges of distribution, marketing, yeah, they're there, but if you're able to overcome them, it puts you in a select position to really be able to be successful. Because it is very hard to overcome some of these things. And, you know, fortunately for the last 4 or so years, we've really entrenched ourselves in the industry to a point where we truly know everything about, you know, how to run this business inside and out. And so we're just growing every single day and solving problems as they come.
Yeah. I really thought that Mark Cuban was, you know, tremendous help in just those few seconds of saying, hey, you know, let's talk about the antioxidants. Let's tell your story a little bit more about the differentiation between this and coconut water. And we see today, like, your labeling has changed and your icon. And I think, you know, just that enough of a few seconds with Mark Cuban, we paid off, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, these folks are in the position they're in, you know, for a reason. And certainly, I think they have a lot of experience to share, a lot of great points. I think a lot of it validated a lot of things that we were thinking about at the time, too. So that was really, really good. And yeah, I definitely feel like we're really at this, we've really hit our stride, you know, and you're not just with Good Housekeeping. We're launching Whole Foods this month, in just a couple of weeks, Sprouts nationwide, you know, and you know, so we have a lot of really strong momentum that I think puts us in a position where we just have to focus on building the brand, you know, and certainly I think a lot of what they said, to your point, Charles, came to fruition.
So you mentioned Sprouts and Whole Foods that you're located in. Anywhere else people can find you? And I've seen, I guess you've hit the 1 million can mark recently as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're on Amazon. You can buy a product online. We're really saturated in the Southwest, you know, cactus country, if you will, right? And so most of our team is down there. And so our focus from a retail distribution standpoint is really to focus in the Southwest, because it just requires less education. Also, you know, I mean, it's a warmer climate. So the beverage season, the hydration season is a bit longer. There's also a little bit more of an emphasis on health conscious sort of points of distribution down there, right? More accounts to kind of to build your business around. And so it's a great place to build a brand in the Southwest. But certainly we have accounts up here in the Northeast as well. And you can find our store locator on our website.
And can't sign off before asking, do you have any new product developments or innovations that Prickly Cactus Water is considering or you have in the pipeline that you're able to share?
We're working on some really exciting things. Nothing that I can share to too much degree at this existing moment. But I will say that, you know, again, it goes back to our mission. You know, our mission is really to create a brand that champions healthier hydration options for everyone and really does it in a way that the champions natural ingredients, sustainable ingredients and packaging. And it's something that can really be something that rallies families and, you know, together, something for the entire family. So products that fit in that vein of our mission is exactly where we're innovating. So we should see some really exciting things come out in the next, I'd say, like 18 months.
Quan, you're an inspiration to both the AAPI community and pharmacy students, as well as being a first generation American. So what would you tell people who are considering pursuing a path similar to yours?
I think finding something that you're authentically passionate about that you can really wake up and just give everything to, because it takes that and more. And then doing it with the support of loved ones and people around you, you just can't do it by yourself. You know, but I think it's just so important that what you pursue, you authentically do feel passionate about. And I've just seen, just again, it goes back to it. Entrepreneurship is not for everyone. It is so, so challenging. It's so much more glamorized externally than it is internally. But I think the beauty of it, you know, I think there's a saying, right, which is like the journey is the destination. And I think that as we've gone through this journey, that has not been clear to us. And the biggest reason for it is, as our goals have become larger and larger, you know, and some to points where we had no idea that we could have achieved these things, we started to, you know, realize over time that the outcome isn't actually what matters anymore, right? And it certainly isn't even the biggest reward. The biggest reward, I think, that you can get from entrepreneurship is kind of the person that you become along that journey. The skill sets, the community, the impact, the relationships, and just the learnings, the wisdom, the experiences that you gain. I think to me, that's really what the prize is at the end of the day. That is the ultimate definition of success in my books. And I think when, you know, folks are considering entrepreneurship, like that is really what you're signing up for, right? Don't get so obsessed with the outcome. The outcome, you know, is great. Great if you achieve it, great if you don't. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to understand, like, you're doing this for the right reasons, which is to make a good impact and something that you believe in authentically and are passionate about. Without those things, it's going to be really difficult to succeed.
Well, you are doing tremendous work. It is always great talking to a proud and successful University of Maryland Baltimore alumnus, and we wish you nothing but the best in your future and with Prickly.
Thank you so much, guys. It means the world.
The UMB Pulse with Charles Chalade and Dana Rampola is a UMB Office of Communications and Public Affairs production. Edited by Charles Chalade, marketing by Dana Rampola.